Jonathan, it is awesome to be with you again.
Great to be back, Seth. You ready to get into it? Are you feeling penitent as always during this Lenten season?
Honestly, when we're recording this, it's not yet Lent, so if I'm
honest.
Don't
break the fourth wall,
Seth. If I'm honest, not yet. I have till tomorrow.
And technically, it's still Fat Tuesday, too. So
Exactly.
So we're feeling the exact opposite of penitent. New Orleans is crazy this kind of time of year.
Yes. With the craziness of New Orleans in mind, I have a question for you. What would you do in this particular situation? Would you want to have paper cuts perpetually on three of your five fingers on each hand, so 6 out of 10 total, or every time you walk around, it feels like you're wearing a backpack?
I mean, if there was ever a Lent question, like, this question can only be asked during an episode about Lent or an episode about hell, so, and because paper cuts... No, I would absolutely go with the backpack.
Yeah, same.
I feel like I would get used to that in a way that would just make me stronger for the most part. Whereas just constantly getting paper cuts on, for whatever reason, three of my five fingers on each hand just feels particularly egregious.
I picked 3 out of the 5 because I wanted it to be able to compete with the backpack. Like, if I made it too bad, then I knew you would never pick the backpack.
Still didn't compete. Honestly, if it was just really? Like constant paper cut, yeah.
If it was just like a constant paper cut on one finger, still would still pick the backpack.
And the worst option you could have suggested is that you constantly have paper cuts in like the gaps between your fingers.
Oh my gosh.
Oh,
yeah, that wouldn't have compared with the backpack. I would go backpack too, especially because I said just while you're walking. Because like if you were sitting, you don't want to wear the backpack. I feel like that made it worse, like a lot worse. Mm-hmm. So we're in agreement.
We figured it out.
I know. Yeah. They should come to us with every difficult option.
Yeah, especially the difficult problems that we create ourselves.
Yes, agreed. Well, speaking of difficult questions, difficult situations, the gospel for the second Sunday in Lent is Mark chapter 8, verses 31 to 38. And right before this passage, Jesus asks, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter correctly identifies Jesus as the Messiah. But now, when Jesus predicts his own suffering and death, he tells the disciples, "If any wish to come after me, let them deny themselves and take up their crosses and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it." It seems like a pretty well-known text. And I guess I want to start with my first question. And I feel like we've talked about this a lot before the reboot of this podcast. We've sort of asked this question. But it's like, how do we apply this idea of people denying themselves and taking up their cross? Like, how do we apply that appropriately? You know, who should we be willing to tell to suffer? And who might find comfort in this, if anyone? That's just my first question, which I thought would be helpful to think about.
Yeah, I find myself thinking back to a lot of our episodes and having a lot of questions about this, because I think how you approach this passage, like every passage, but this one in particular, your interpretation is so likely to change depending on your positionality in some way. If you are a person who doesn't suffer very much, you might find something like aspirational about this story. Or you might look on those who suffer with pity and sympathy without actually giving them an opportunity to be heard or to hear them. If you are a person who suffers a lot, you may find comfort in this as well. saying. There's something that Jesus is saying that connects to what Jesus has done that resonates more with my experience than the person or the people or the group that's putting me through this.
Yeah, those are helpful sort of hermeneutics, helpful ways to think about like how we might apply this. And I think, for example, if somebody's gonna preach it or teach it at a Bible study of some kind, like it's really important to know your audience. Sort of like know like what some of their background is. This is always the difficult part when you supply preach, which I did for a while. It was like, man, I'm going to these places, I don't know anybody. And I was just like, okay, gotta try and pick something out here that's meaningful to everybody. But as you get to know people in your context, I think it gets a little bit easier to think about like how to apply it, you know, which way do you want to go with it, right? Just, and the classic term for this is just like we exegete the text. You have to exegete your congregation, your context. Another question I thought that people could think about might be, why is this passage the second Sunday in Lent? Or why is it in Lent at all? In other words, why this reading right now? And I was just thinking about the ways that Lent already calls us to deny ourselves and even to take up our cross in a very small ways. Like just the classic themes of Lent, of prayer and fasting and giving alms or giving some money away. Right? Each of them are just like little ways that we can deny ourselves rather than enriching ourselves in the process. So even though they're small, I was just thinking like those at least echo, you know, some of these like bigger sacrifices and, you know, literal crosses that Jesus and others, you know, carried. And then my last question is just what are some really concrete ways that other people have taken up their cross? And I was thinking, at least for myself, like this is like a one way you could talk about some people from church history, like people who, you know, who gave up their lives for the gospel. I think I've told this story before, but people like Dirk Willems, who was a pacifist, and he was imprisoned, and he got so skinny from the prison food that he was able to slip between the bars and make a run for it. He's running across this lake, and it could hold his weight because he was so thin. But as the prison guards were chasing him, one fell into the lake through the ice. And he turns around, and he helps him, and he's recaptured. Like, what a way to, I mean, literally deny yourself freedom. That had to feel like the bloody irony of the cross to him. That's an example that's sort of radical. But I think like there are other smaller ways that people are doing it today too, like someone could talk about. Do you have any ideas, any thoughts about that?
I think actually my reaction is kind of similar to what I was saying before too. It's like, it's hard for me to say who is bearing burdens that they need to be bearing.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's easy to identify who is bearing burdens, I'd say, to some extent. And then I'm also challenged about, like, this passage reminds me of kind of the necessity to take the burdens that come our way. And I'm just wondering about what of the burdens that many of us face are actually necessary today. In this program now, focusing on leadership and educational policy, I just think about the weight that our students bear in our schools, the weight of fearing for their own safety, the weight of trying to discover who they are. And even those two hypotheticals are good examples of burdens that we place and impose, and burdens that are, I would say, worth bearing, right? The burden of discovery is worth bearing, and it's one that we need to go through, because we are born not knowing who we are and who we get to be. But the burden of safety is one that we all bear responsibility for, but we don't all bear the weight of it equally. And so I'm thinking about that, is that even Christ's cross was not a burden he needed to bear. I would argue, obviously I know a lot of people would argue differently depending on some of their theology, but Christ identified that burden as worth bearing even though it was imposed on him. And it's so interesting that we often, especially folks that think and look a lot like you and me, we often think that the Christ-like thing to do is to support putting burdens, putting crosses on others.
I think that's a really helpful corrective, like a helpful note. And I think they just sometimes naming those burdens that people are experiencing can be really helpful. Like whether they, you know, have, and that's regardless of whether they have actively chosen to bear them, or if they've been, you know, they've been, or if those burdens have been put on them from above, right? But I think that, like, when we name them, that itself can be liberating, can make us feel like, oh, I'm not in this alone. You know, someone else sees these burdens too. Even if they're not experiencing them themselves, at least they see my burdens. Like when you talk about the way that your students have the burden of worrying about and maintaining their safety. Like that seems to me like, oh, and I'm glad he, even from my seat at my desk, I thought, oh, I'm glad that he named that. There was something about that that made me feel like, oh, I'm glad he sees that too. So just naming them, I think can be helpful.
Absolutely. Yeah. And naming, you're exactly right. It either develops or illuminates a shared awareness that can lead to more action. Can I ask how you're seeing this text about denying yourself interacting with some of the others for this Sunday?
Jonathan, that is a great question, because if I'm honest...
If you're honest, no. And that's going to be a
yeah. And if I'm honest, I don't know, because the Old Testament reading is God renaming Abram to Abraham, and God promises, I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make nations of you, and kings shall come of you. Then in the response psalm, it's just like, it's just all out praise, which I think we're supposed to hear that as maybe Sarah and Abraham's joy, like after God tells them this. And then in the New Testament reading, we get Paul's reading of Genesis, which is its own sort of mind boggle. But it's Paul's interpretation of our first passage when he argues that because Abraham had faith in God's promise, it was reckoned to him as righteousness. And if I'm honest, I don't know exactly how they're connected. I've been thinking, like, maybe this is one of the examples from the lectionary in which all the texts don't illuminate each other, but that, you know, the first three kind of illuminate each other, and our gospel reading can sort of supplement the other three.
Yeah. This is a really important reminder for us as we get into this new format, that, like, as much as we might want to try to organize ourselves in preparation and share these conversations, we can't force these frameworks and understandings onto the text. Like, these texts were chosen for whatever reason, and someone may have had a connection between them. Others, and especially as we get into some of the ordinary time texts and the summertime texts, is going to get kind of weird. And so, to our listeners, we promise that when we can't or don't find connections that might be as explicit as some of our other episodes have been so far, it's not just because we only had time to look at one passage and we're like, the other ones are fine. there will probably be times where one of the passages resonates more with us, or we won't, you know, or we will choose to focus in one direction or the other. But it's a helpful reminder that this tool that is guiding us in the lectionary is just that. It's a tool. It is not gospel, though it makes reference to it many times. It is intended to help introduce us to more and more of the scripture. And when you're pulling from such a wide array of voices, you're bound to get sometimes, some Sundays even, that don't quite line up in the way that you think they could or should.
That made me feel better, Jonathan.
Good. Well, why don't you pray and we'll get out of here until next week.
That would be wonderful. Oh God, in your infinite love, you suffered the shame and humiliation of the cross. Grant that we too may risk our comfort and convenience by taking up our own crosses to follow your Son, Jesus Christ, our Savior and Lord.